What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Let's Talk Divots podcast. We are a women's professional golf podcast talking about everything relevant in the women's game and the LPGA Tour. I'm your co-host, Casey Johnson, a 13-year PGA of Canada member who now walks inside the ropes on the LPGA Tour. I'm joined by my counterpart, my good buddy, Captain Ron Dunn, jack of all trades, master of, we're still deciding that, but Superstroke rep, putting arc rep, CEO transportation, caddy, you name it, he's doing there, the boom mic. And yeah, we're just stoked to be bringing you this, to be broadcasting and trying to grow the game, trying to grow not just golf, but all, you know, the women's game. So if you like our content, go ahead, share us. We are at Let's Talk Divots on all social media platforms, and we really, really appreciate that. It's been a, you know, a great first season. We're kind of coming into the finality of it all, and we've just been overwhelmed with the support, and we've really, really enjoyed doing this. So please go ahead, share it with a friend, and just keep the ball rolling, and that's awesome. So Ronnie, what's going on, brother?
Oh my, I'm over here on the East Coast. I woke up early today and went and watched the sunrise down to the beach. That was pretty interesting, being from California and all.
Yeah, I mean, we got a little off week happening right now. We got a guest in the rig, man.
One more day in studio. That's right.
We're in studio right now. What's going on, Chris Edwards?
Hey guys.
Hey, Chris. Welcome to the show, man. Glad you can stop by.
Yeah, well, free beers always entice me in.
There you go. Around. Always cold them.
How do you feel with a mic? And what does it feel like to be talent right now? Like you are the talent.
I mean, I feel like I'm a lack of talent.
No, you're used to it.
But this is different. It's different. I feel like I might be kind of a Beyonce here with a big mic in front of me, but it's all right.
Well, you could hold on a second. Hold on. Was that a first joke?
Beyonce's mic's a lot bigger than that.
Anyway, Chris Edwards, he's a friend of the pod. He works for Charlotte Thomas, who is a big friend of the pod. If you go back in our Cash episode 8 or 9, I believe, we had a really great interview with her. But Chris, why don't you tell the listeners, get into a little bit of your story for us, just so we can, have a bit of background.
Right. Okay. Well, so if I just talk about caddying, because everything else is pretty irrelevant.
We don't want to know anything else.
A bit of an accent. Where are you from?
So, from London. Well, North London.
Oh, man. I thought Scottish this whole time.
No. Casey keeps calling me Scottish.
Home of the Clash.
Yeah, exactly. So, I'm North London based. Started caddying because I was working as a PGA pro at my local course. And we had a girl that played there, Hannah Burke, and she basically needed a caddy, so went and did it. Was supposed to do it for a couple of weeks. A couple of weeks turned into a couple of months.
What year was this?
I think it was about 5 years ago. So the problem we had was she wanted me to caddy for her. Went along. We had a top 10 at the Scottish. Got into the British. Had a top 15 at the British Open.
Oh, so you're cashing checks
and
right
I'm
off
like,
the bat.
I'm like, this is the easiest job in the world. It was like, I was playing Tiger Woods with a real life person. And then we go out to Czech Republic, third event out, and she wins.
Like, oh my!
First.
Are you kidding me?
No, wow! First, so that was her first win. I was like, God, I'm just the best caddy in the universe. Like, I'm the number one caddy. And
awesome.
And then,
start.
Yeah, steadily went downhill from there. A few weeks became a few months, and then did a second year with her, and then I tried out on the men's in Europe. And then got asked to come out here.
When you say tried out with the men's, did you get a bag?
So, yeah, I worked out there for a friend of mine, Jamie.
Donaldson.
Not Jamie Donaldson. The guy called Jamie Rutherford. He was a good player, but it wasn't his year, should you say that?
Sure.
So I went and worked with him for a year and then came out with Emily, did a year with Emily and Nicole and
Emily Pedersen. Yeah, who, shout out to Emily Pedersen, just won back-to-back weeks in the LET.
Three times this year.
Yeah, and what the biggest ever check for the women over there, Chris? Is that
That wasn't a major. Yeah,
$100,000,
123,000 euros, I think it was.
And we are rolling out the red carpet. She's on her way to play in the U.S. Open here in a couple weeks.
Yep.
I can't wait to see her.
That's how much delayed impact I had. It just took 2 years for my caddy to affect her, you know?
So it was kind of like that jar of olives you gave me in the kitchen to open the other day where you just kind of like you loosened it or like you got her going in the right direction.
I get it ready and then someone just finishes it off, you know? It's just a delayed
effect. Insert joke here, like big time. We're gonna keep this clean, okay?
So it was good. I did that. And to be honest, after 6 months out in the LPGA, I was like, this is where I need to be. Like, it was great fun. The girls are great.
How did you come over here to the States, to the LPGA from LET?
So Emily brought me over.
Okay.
So I was coming towards the end of the year.
2018?
I don't know what year it was.
That was my rookie year, and that's when I met Emily for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, it must have been 2018. And she was just like, look, could you come out and see LPGA? I did a couple events at the back end of 17. And then she just said, yeah, come out, we'll do a year. And yeah, we got to, I worked with her up to Thornbury. And then I did finish the year with Nicole. And it was great. And so just went from that. And then straight after that year, started working with Charlotte. And then
Did you do the Solheim Cup with Emily?
Been dreamy since then.
2017?
No, so she did the Solheim and then had a few events after that. And then I came along.
Perfect.
So, yeah, I missed all the big stuff.
What's the LET like? I mean, sounds like you spent some time out there. I've heard some stories. Like, I mean, I guess it's a good place to kind of start to, figure out your craft, so to speak, right? Like, I mean, you go from working at the club, trying to be a PGA member, which I'll probably probe you about a little bit later. But, is it a good place to start out caddying, as it's kind of like a bit of a, it's a great tour, but it doesn't have the depth there. And then you're traveling all over Europe and, even different continents and stuff like that. Like, it must be great fun.
Yeah, the LET's great. The LET's really great. It's a great tour. Sadly, when I started caddying out there, I think the first year I was out there, we had, I want to say like 24 events. The second year was like 22, and then it just declined after, and it was down to, I think they played like 14 events last year. But now the LPGA has got hold of it. I think it's gonna rock it up again. But it was great. I mean, you find your feet, you learn about traveling, you learn what it's like to be in and around caddies. I mean, when I was working out there the first year, I reckon there was probably 40 or 50 caddies working on the tour. And then the following year, it might have dropped by 10. But I mean, you learn about different places, learn about yourself. So you go all around the world. I mean, it's where I met Ollie Brett, and we've had some
name drop.
We've had some great times out there, and
it's not mandatory to have a caddy out there.
No. So it was never mandatory unless you're in the final six groups on Saturday and Sunday. So you do a lot of caddying out there where you'll caddy during the week, and then you'll get a lot of caddies that will miss the cut, and then they'll go and work for someone for the weekend.
That's strange, huh?
Which is, it's
made for TV.
Yeah, like, so you'd think, you saw someone do it on the LPJ, you'd be like, that's weird, they were working with someone else. But out in the LET, that was just a thing that happened, and it's just purely financially, like, the girls are winning the Ordre de Mérite out there with, I mean, Emily's going to do it this year with like 350,000 euros, but she's had some huge paychecks. The girls are winning out there with more like 200,000 euros, which is a fifth, maybe less, of what's going to be on the LPGA. So it's just finance based, but it's a great place. I loved it. The girls are great fun. All the caddies I met were a great time. And you learn what you got to do. And then you come here, and rather than coming out here and working out here and thinking like, whoa, these are big events, there's lots of people watching, there's lots of stuff going on,
there's a learning curve, because I came out here straight onto the LPGA tour, and like, I apologize EC Gabsa, my first ever bag, but I fucking butchered it, you know what I mean? Like, and like, I'm a golf pro for a lot of years, but like, it's a whole different skill set, right? So that's what I mean. Like, just even now, year two, and a few bosses under my belt, really feeling good and awesome and comfortable out there. But like, man, it doesn't matter what you do. I mean, Ron, old school pool business. I mean, you didn't come out of the gun knowing where that filter needed to be done. You didn't know how to suck everything out of there, right? Right from the get-go, right?
Exactly. But yeah, this is a large learning curve. It's on the steep hill, and then it starts cruising. You get to the top of the peak, and then you can kind of mellow out, and it mellows out, and you kind of figure it out here.
Yeah,
I'm still climbing the hill.
It is. It's great. I mean, I still remember, I said it to Casey the other day, I remember when I came out, so I was with Hannah in Europe, and we qualified for the US Open at the Buckinghamshire, and I came out with no idea what it was going to be like. And I was just like, oh, this is
crowds.
Big.
Crowds
like,
are
this
here.
This is huge. And it was fantastic. And then that was, you know, it's just the more you do it, the more I do it, the more I love it, which is the only job I've ever done where I still come to work and want to be at work.
Right. It is a good walk.
Yeah.
You said something to me actually a couple times now, and I've actually started to use the quote. Sorry. So I'm just going to paraphrase you here and just tell you that I've stolen your lingo, but I'm sure it's not original. You know,
I steal most of my.
Well, you're like, we play the lottery every single week. Right. And you kind of just kind of like, it's like a bit like chasing the dragon, right? Like there's some serious highs out there. There's definitely comes with some lows, but you know, every time you tee it up, you could potentially win the lottery. I mean, as a caddy, you could, and I mean, there's obviously better odds on different players as you're out there, but you know, at retrospect, you could be making, you know, Paul Fusco has the potential to win another $25,000 tomorrow, you know?
It's Russian roulette out here. You know, you don't know who you get on your bag. And like I've always said, anybody who puts a tee in the ground can win the thing. Casey's got a different opinion. There's people that have better chances, but you still are out there. It is a lottery, and it's exciting.
100%, I mean, what was it, ANA this year? I don't know the exact, but I think Miriam Lee was 300-1 going into that week.
That's crazy.
I bet.
And yeah, you're right. Anybody can win every week, but like there's the, you know, 1,000-1 versus sure. the 10-1, you know? So the odds are odds, but yeah.
That's why they play the game.
Yeah, that's why love coming back.
It's sport. That's why you play it out. You know, that's like, why do they even play the, you know, Man United versus, you know, I know nothing about football, but I've been rooming with Chris. We've been watching football, right? But like, you know, because it's sport, underdogs come, they win. There's human element in
people
it.
People root for the underdog.
It's the same thing in golf, human element. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you got the most stock, you know, 12, hole 12 at Augusta shot into a 100 and pitching wedge, 130-yard green. You know what? It could go in the water still, and you could lose it all.
Yeah.
So with your career caddying, Chris, you've seen the world. You've traveled around.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of places.
Pretty impressive, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've been, in fact, to Charlotte flew me the entire way around the world at the beginning of this year to Australia. She made me fly from London to San Francisco to Australia, and then Australia through Asia back home. I was like, Charlotte, you've literally made
around
me do
the globe.
An entire loop of the world. And she was like, yeah, I'm sorry.
So I'm going to call Charlotte out now because she's like, you know, pretty green and like ethical and, you know, has got some really good morals. But that's carbon footprint is through the roof.
Yeah, my footprint. I was Bigfoot that week. I was stamping over everything.
So where's your favorite place and how much better? So where's your favorite place over the course of those years on tour, European, LPGA? And how much better is it traveling around Europe than America?
So my favorite place that I've been to and caddied at would probably be Japan. Caddied in the Queen's Cup there once, which was like a tournament. It's the LET versus ALPG versus, I think it's CLPGA and the KLPGA. And there's like this team event. And Japan is just, I mean, it's just amazing. It's just an incredible place. So clean, so impressive. And they prefer the women's golf out there to the men's golf. And we had...
Why?
I don't know. Don't know, but we had thousands and thousands come to watch this team event, and it was just incredible.
Who were you working for?
That was at the end of the first year I was working with Hannah, which was, I mean, God.
When you say Hannah, you're not talking Hannah Green, are you?
No, Hannah Burke.
She's from Australia.
Where's Hannah Burke now?
She's still playing on the LET.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so it's, that was incredible. But yeah, traveling around Europe is very different to here. I mean, in Europe, you flew everywhere, right? So you would fly destination. You would go from Sweden, then you'd fly to France, and you'd fly from France, you'd fly to Germany, and you fly these sort of hour or 2 hour flights. But the LET were really good because they would always have a bus that would shuttle you to and from like where the player official hotel was. So then you'd get off the bus, you'd stay at a hostel or somewhere near it, and you just walk to and from the hotel. So you weren't always hiring cars. As we're out here, we just drive everywhere. Like,
yeah, you have
America's
to.
America's independent here.
You urban sprawl everywhere, right?
Yeah. And it's great. But part of me does, like, you do miss the part where, because, I mean, the Men's European Tour, which I know we've got a Caddy Association stuff signing up out here, and, you know, maybe in the future we'll have it, but it's one of them things where, like, Men's European Tour, we used to have official caddy hotels. So there was a caddy rate and a caddy hotel, and there was a bus that went from the caddy hotel to the course, so no one ever hired a car. You just got to that hotel, and then they shuttled you to and from the course every day. And, like, it's an expense that's it's not huge, but it does make a big difference in the long run.
Cars add up, man. They're not cheap. You know, if you had a no car expense for the week, I mean, as you know, we're all kind of trying to, you know, get into several people in houses and rent cars and stuff. I mean, any dime saved is a dime put in your pocket. But, you know, I guess the wages on the LET, I hear, are certainly not what the LPGA is. Is it like, you know, is it scraping by? Is it losing money? I mean, no, you shouldn't be doing a job where you actually lose money. I mean, but it sounds like there's a story by your chuckle.
I mean, there have been times, there have been many a time when I've done an event on the Ladies European Tour where I have spent far more than I've been paid that week, because you either miss the cut or you have the occasional night out where it just goes a bit mad. And it's for me, when I first started caddying, so much of it was just all the experience that I was like, well, why would I not do this? You know, I remember going out in Shanghai and I was like, everyone was like, oh, why are you going out in Shanghai? Like, you're going to spend a load of money. And I'm like, they're like, you've missed the cut. And I'm like, when else am I going to go out in Shanghai? Like, I'm just going to go. I'm not going to hold back.
20 years later, you're still a tour caddy. You visit Shanghai every year. Right? But yeah, I love that attitude, though.
Yeah. And so the only thing I regret doing is when we used to go to India, they used to organize a trip to the Taj Mahal. And
a caddy trip.
For the players and caddies. And you paid, like, I don't know what it was, €100, and you could go on this trip to the Taj Mahal. And I said no to going, because at the time I was going to go with my then ex-girlfriend. I was like, oh, I'll go with her, because I thought it'd be quite a special thing
to do. You missed the bus.
Now I'm thinking, like, well, I didn't like her anyway. I probably should have just gone. But it was like that sort of thing. Like, you're not going to turn down that experience. You're not going to go there and go, oh, you know what? I'm only being paid X. I should hold back and not do this. You're like, no, I've got, like, you only live once.
There's no budget.
Yeah. Right? Like, and if you have, you make the cut, you cover your costs. You don't make the cut, all right, you might have a bit more.
It sounds like the camaraderie over there with the caddies is a lot different than over here. It's kind of like at Manchester football over there. After the game is over, you go have a beer together with the losing team, winning team. Over here, not so much.
Yeah, I mean, we were a big group together, but I think you had to be. When you're balling on a budget like we were, it was one of them places where you just had to work together with everything. Out here, you've got, not a hierarchy, because I think everyone, I mean, Paul Fusco, he's arguably right now the number one caddy on tour in terms of.
But I think there's like a bit of a hierarchy out here. Like, not in, like, I mean, what the hell makes a number one caddy? I mean, I have no idea, but there's people who hold the good bags, right? And Paul Fusco. But Paul Fusco is a diamond of a man.
100%.
Like that guy is just a gentleman.
Yeah, and that's it. And I think there's, on the LET, because the financial stuff is a lot lower, because everyone's working together, there's no real big egos. There's no one that thinks they're bigger than everyone else. Everyone's kind of just getting them in, and they're trying to all work together. And that's why when the European caddies come out here, you know, we stick together. Like, you stay together, you look after each other, you make sure you're all right, you make sure people are picked up from airports and they get into places. You don't leave a man behind. Now, I met you out here, Casey, and I'd do the same for you, but there are probably people that wouldn't do the same. But that's, I think part of that is the European-American divide. So it's like the Ryder Cup or the Solheim Cup is going on at all times.
And maybe that's why the Europeans can't win the Americans can't win the Ryder Cup. No, nothing against, I mean, Ron's one of my best friends. He's American. But I find that the internationals, I don't know, I seem to connect a little bit more with. It's kind of tough to crack that U.S. bubble for whatever reason. I mean, I have no idea why.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not
cultural difference, right?
And I'm not bothered. I'm like, look, you know, if you want to be friends, I'm friendly with everyone. I don't mind. If you don't want to be, that's cool too. Like, you know, keep yourself to yourself. But if one of my friends is struggling, I'm going to help him out. If one of you guys is struggling, I'm going to help my friend out first. Like, if you want to be my pal, then I'll help everyone out. You know, it's trying to keep the camaraderie while also staying as professional as possible.
Have you given up on your pro golf career? Now you're a caddy for life?
I was never a pro golfer. I
well, not pro golfer, but you were.
He is a PGA member.
I'm a PGA pro. So it's taken me a long time to pass, which everyone who knows me.
So is PGA worldwide, Canadian PGA, American PGA, European PGA?
So let me just take this one. The PGA is one of the most top 10 recognized brands in the world. So yes, PGA is an affiliate of, let's call it like So there's difference. I can
doesn't matter what country you're from.
So like the people on tour, those are professional golfers. Okay, they're not actually PGA members. They're PGA Tour members. But to be like an affiliate member of a PGA of Europe, the PGA of Great Britain, the PGA of Canada, the PGA
Japan?
Of America, PGA of Japan, I believe, has a sanctioned. It's not worldwide. Not every country has it. Like PGA of Germany, you know, it's not every country by any means, but it's an organization of an association with you know, stringent guidelines and education and things that you have to go
pass
to
a test
in order to achieve membership and gain membership and hold membership.
Yeah, the way I say it, right, is the girls that we caddy for, they're professional golfers. I'm a golf professional.
I get it now.
That's the way I put it, right?
I'm perfectly said.
I'm a golf professional. I'm not a professional golfer.
Perfectly.
I can get the ball around a golf course in less than some people, but I am never beating these girls. Like, well, I mean, I've beaten Charlotte on the odd occasion, but she beat me last time. And I recently, the last person I beat was Gemma, so I'm going to hold that over her for a long time.
Also a friend of the pod.
But yeah, like, you know, I can bat it round, but I am not a professional golfer. I'm a golf professional.
PGA members are the people that run the golf industry around the world. So they run your golf shops. They, you know, do all the retail. They instruct people. They grow the game. They're the ambassadors. They're the grassroots people. And not even that. I mean, there's some serious leaders the backbone of the industry, to be honest.
So it was not a step down for you to jump over to Lupin?
No, it was so I was lucky. So when we in the UK, when you do your PGA, you have to do 30 hours a week within golf. And the year after I'd started my PGA, they changed that to in a golf shop. So you're supposed to do it as an assistant pro working alongside a head pro. So I was lucky because I did it and I did 5 months in the shop. And then the head pro said, look, he was managing her. He said, look, do you want to go caddy? It's going to be 30 hours a week in golf. I can sign that off. And I did a news article, I think, after I first started for a PGA thing saying, like, you know, it's a route that you can do. Like Harry, Georgia's boyfriend, he was doing his PGA. And it's like, it's a route that the PGA doesn't probably promote enough. Like, look, this is something you can do. You can be a caddy from doing the PGA. If you learn about golf, you have many strings to your bow that then you come out on tour, the girls don't look at you and go, oh, you're just a 5 handicap who doesn't really know what they're doing. They look at you and go, oh, you're a golf professional. You understand the teachings of golf. You understand the golf scene. You understand the physical element. And it's like
golf literacy, I call it, right? Yeah. You have golf IQ.
Yeah, that's it.
Is there any other golf PGA members out on the LPGA tour? Do you know?
Not that I can think of, but there are some, I mean, there's some really good golfers.
Yeah, there's some former, like, people that played, you know, mini tours, et cetera, et cetera, for sure.
But no, it was never a step down. I mean, this is, for me, like, if you're a PGA pro and you want to be a caddy, like, all for it. Like, that's amazing. Like, this is, I don't want to do anything else. And, like, this is the mountaintop for me, just continuing to do this and live the life I live.
You love it.
Yeah, 100%.
And traveling the world.
Yeah, like, doing what I do and seeing the girls play and seeing how they play golf courses that sometimes might be beyond what you would think would be physically possible for people who hit it as far as they might hit it, and they go and shoot 500 and you go, how the hell did they do that? Like,
if only I could chip and putt like that.
Yeah, like, I'd be hitting it 50 past them and I'm no chance of my going around in that.
That is one thing I have learned. I got to be honest, there's more than better than half the time the girl hits first, furthest away, shortest drive, gets the birdie and the other people don't. I am amazed how many times driving distance, DeChambeau, listen up. It is not all that. People in the back of the pack, they can put it close and they make the putt. And the other people are super close. They chip it 15 feet past and two putt. It's amazing.
Well, they can, but distance is obviously an advantage. Like,
yeah,
no question.
I would be really intrigued as to if they did this year, if they could. They put it out as like the driving distances and then equated it to where they were on the money list. Like, if you did that, looked at the top 20 and saw where it was, I'd be intrigued to see what it was.
The dispersion out here on the LPGA tour, like, and what gets me this week is this last week we've just had in at the Pelican is like just painted an even bigger picture of the dispersion of like all we did was hit fairway woods and hybrids into greens. Like, you don't see that on the men's tour. And, like, I think, like, from the men's tour, like, the big hitters to the small hitters, it's not that, like, drastic as out here on the women's tour. Is that something you agree with?
Yeah, I'd just say that it's the distance is probably the same, like, as in it's probably 60 yards, right? Like, it's probably 340 to 280 or 340
averages?
To 270. Like,
on the
like,
men's
on
tour
the men's
off
tour.
The drive.
So it's probably the same. But as a percentage of their course distance, that's way less than what the women have, which is the same. The women, it's probably 60, 70 yards as well. But because we're on a shorter golf course, or we're on a course that's so much longer for how far we hit it, I think it just has a bigger impact. I mean, I don't think I would ever see, like, on the men's tour, I don't think I'd ever see even the shortest hitters hitting 2-3 woods into par fours.
Not a chance. Not a chance.
I mean, we did that twice in the week. You hit 2-3 woods into par fours, and you're like, that's a really hard hole. Like, we're hitting a three. Like, I'm just impressed we get it. Like, I'm like, wow. Like, we've hit the green with a three. We're like, I could never imagine doing that. You know, but these girls are talented enough that it doesn't affect their scorecard so much that the tour goes, oh, wow, we need to change this, you know, because the girls are so good at it.
Yeah, I mean, you're coming in with, like, less speed than the men, obviously. So, they're just so straight, you know. Those three woods are actually, like, on a rope, yeah. Right? So
it's incredible. But I would be intrigued to see, yeah, like I say, the money list with the distances, but also likewise the course distances and what the driving average was for the winners. Because, I mean, Imbi nearly won KPMG, and I wasn't at the event, but that didn't look like a short golf course. And Imbi Park's finishing in second place.
Yeah, I was actually really shocked. I mean, obviously, Imbi's a big major winner, but, you know, and the best putter out there, but yeah, it was a long golf course, and, you know, for her to finish in that top five, I was surprised to see her up there. But those perfect greens, I guess she was just able to get the job done.
Yeah, it's I don't know, it's crazy when you look at it, but I don't know what the stats are. I remember speaking to Mark Sweeney once when he was walking around with Brittany Altomare, and he said to me the only thing that the men are better than the girls at is chipping to inside 6 feet. And I couldn't believe that. I was like, really? Mm. He was like, yeah. He said, that's the only thing. He said, strokes gained, everything like that on the golf courses, they're pretty much identical.
So you said, like, you're at the pinnacle right now. Like, you're just so stoked to be out here. And, like, you know, in your mind, I mean, you know, you've been going at it for 4 or 5 years, it sounds like. I know you've got a great thing going with Charlotte. She's a great player. It's only her second year out here, and, you know, lots of talent to come. And I know you guys have a great relationship, but what is the pinnacle for you, you know? I mean, like, what's the, you know, is there like a, you know,
in a major.
You want to see, Ron's making a drink right now from afar yelling, like, do you want to win? Do you want to remain out here forever? Is like the men's tour a thing? Like, you already been on the European men's tour. Like, you know, what is the actual peak?
Well, that's the $1 million question, I suppose, Casey. I mean, for me, the peak is,
you're a young man, you're not even 30.
No, not yet. I'm close, but I'm not there yet. So for me, the pinnacle is probably making like a getting in like a Solheim Cup. I'm not motivated by the financial aspect of stuff. Like, I never really have been. And so for me, the motivation is obviously success, and like being loyal to someone and seeing them improve. Like, you know, I've watched Charlotte. We obviously played last year. She had a couple of great finishes and then was kind of so-so for the season. And then this year, you know, we've played really solid for pretty much the whole year. We've had a bit of a dip, and I kind of feel like that was my fault because I got COVID and stuff, and that kind of affected it. And, you know, like, I felt like that was kind of down to me. But, you know, You, as long as you see that continued improvement, for me, it's like, okay, well, I'm still adding value to what we're doing. And if we win an event, it will be incredible. And like, that's one of the aims, obviously, every week is to try and win an event. But I think in kind of, if we can make a Solheim Cup in the next 3 or 5 years, like, obviously that's quite a long time now, but like, that would be amazing to be able to do that and experience what that's like. It's something that I just haven't experienced yet.
But you're not going to drop the mic. You win the Solheim Cup, call it a career. You're out here for forever, for a while. Sure, it's a job. Finances are great, but that's not what drives you. You're out here for quality of life over quantity of life.
And sorry, I'm just going to keep going on that, Chris, before you go. And, like, the loyalty, like, I love that. You show so much character, and I know Charlotte's going to listen to this pod, but, I mean, you say 3 to 5 years, like, you know, just the way that you're forecasting, you know, being with, you know, one player, you guys are friends, you get along and you believe in her. And I think that's just so important. And, you know, maybe I'm going about that different. I don't think you'd say anything otherwise, but, you know, that's missing out here. We talk about it at length on this podcast, just that, like, that solid relationship, the ability to just, like, go to the moon with each other, believe in each other, and, like, really, really form a solid bond.
Yeah. I mean, like, the dream is, like, and it sounds probably a bit unrealistic right now, but...
Dream, buddy, this podcast, we're dreaming.
The dream is that, you know, you win together, you do everything together, and then Sunday at the Solheim, you draw, like, a Lexi Thompson who's going to hit it miles past you, and you beat her, and everyone's like, there we go. There's the, you know, I mean, there's the pit bull taking down an American legend, you know, like that's the dream of, like, the end goal, you know, of trying to get to that. But it's, yeah, I mean, so many people are out here thinking, oh, it's a quick thing. You go out there, you can earn a load of money really quick. Like, you can't, like, that's not how it works. Yeah. Okay. There's one winner every week, but the reality of it is it's a long-term thing. You want to be with someone, want to see them improve, and you want to be a part of that building process. I mean, you've only got to look
You
at,
want that, but it's not always the case, man. And again, we talk about it, and it seems every time it comes up when we talk to your caddy, it's a – and I agree with you. I'm in total agreement. I think you need every spoke in the wheel. You know, in order to win out here, I think you got to be a balance with, like, mind, body, spirit, family, nutrition, health. You know, like, everything's got to be really, really rolling. And in order to that, I think – you know, and some people do, you know, well, they'll negate that. And there's somebody so talented out here that they can win with no caddy. But at the most part, I think that those stars need to be aligned.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, like, for me, I'm lucky, like you said, Ron, about lifestyle and stuff. Like, for me, I'm super lucky because, like, I've got Nora at home.
Shout out to Nora.
Who's, like, my fiance, incredible woman, and, like, my best friend. And she loves that I do this because she sees how happy it makes me. And I think if you can, like, if you see caddies enjoying themselves, I think there's probably caddies that don't, that do it because it's just what they do. But I think it's one of them where if everyone can just enjoy doing what they do, you'll always be improving. You'll always be getting better. And, like, and if there's a moment where Charlotte says, look, you know, I think I can improve more with someone else, like, I wouldn't hold her back. I'd be like, look, you go for that. You need to do what's best for you as a golfer. And likewise, I need to always do what's best for me as a caddy. And now for me, that's always growing with a player and seeing them develop. But I would never begrudge someone going, look, you know, I've got this caddy who's going to help me. He's going to do this, this, and this, and I'm definitely going to win an event. I say, you go for it. You know, see what happens. Because you want to see that person succeed. Even, like, when I work for Emily, I'm still loving the fact that she's winning now. It's like, this is amazing. Like,
well, I kind of take away from that cakesy ass what your excuse me, long-term goals are, staying out here. Do you think you can be with Charlotte for 3 years? And you want to be on a Solheim Cup. Is that anybody's bag or is that Charlotte Thomas's bag?
No, it's 100% Michelle. 100%. Because I don't...
I just see so much fluctuation out here. I don't know how many people last more than a season or two.
But that's why I brought that up. When I asked him that, it was like, it was no question that it was with Charlotte. And that's why I said,
three
shout
to five
out
years,
Charlotte,
that's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, like... Like, I said to Charlotte, said, every time you want me to improve something, you just tell me, and we'll see if I can improve. Like,
communication.
Like, yeah, and that's it. And you improve the lines of communication the whole time. And we've done it recently, and now I'm helping her with other elements of her game. And hopefully we're going to see it, you know, we're going to see it flourish, and we're going to see better results from it. And that's, I think, if you can keep that going with a player, why would you leave them? You know, why would you go, oh, yeah,
well, I don't think a caddy leaves... too many players. The players usually leave the caddies.
No, but likewise, I think if you want a caddy to do something for you, if they say, look, I want you to be able to do this, this, and this, if you tell the caddy, if they can't do that, then that's sure. on them. But if you give them the opportunity, who knows, you know, you never know where you can get.
I think that's, you know, maybe what happens sometimes is the opportunity's not given in order to make that change, right? Like you said, I know in detail of what you and Charlotte are working on. And you know, she told you what she wanted,
yeah.
Right. And
yeah,
and it's it. And what are you gonna? You're, absolutely, you yeah. know. Or you know, actually, I'm not into that. I'm gonna go elsewhere. But yeah. Like, you know, that's not how that conversation went.
And if after 3 or 4 weeks of doing it, if I was really bad at it, if I was rubbish, I would not begrudge her in the slightest. So going, look, Chris, I wanted you to do these three things, and you're just crap at them. But, and I go, you know what? Yeah, okay, fair enough. I'll move. I'll, like, you find someone else, and I'll move on. You know, that wouldn't be a problem.
I talk at length with one of my good friends, you know, weekly about being out here. He's been on tour, et cetera, et cetera. And just about the caddy player relationship and having the, you know, just the reviews after and stuff like that. And it's like, if you don't feel like you're contributing, you know, like if you're just pacing off numbers and carrying the bag, well, what the fuck are you doing? You know, like, you know, so if there's that team element mixed in and, you know, you're reading putts or, you know, whatever she's asking for you to help elevate her game. I mean, you want to feel like you're contributing, number one. Yeah. And then in any job, if you feel wanted, if you feel that contribution factor, well, then obviously you're lifted. You're trying to bring your A game. You're trying to be better. You're seeing financial gain and you're winning as a team.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. I mean, like you wouldn't pay an accountant and then you do your own taxes. You know, like you, if you're paying an accountant,
that's a great analogy.
You might as well get them to help you do your taxes.
You're full of little nuggets.
and that's what I would like to think, that if I can add more value than I'm being paid, then that's all I can do. And it just got to keep doing it every week.
Well, you're welcome to take it a fifth on this, and I probably shouldn't even ask this, but if Charlotte doesn't get her card and she goes back to LET, are you going with her? Are you going to stay out here on LPGA? And I don't mean just any player. If you got
Ooh.
A player,
Ooh.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said. Like I said, you can take the fifth here.
So you say back to LET. So do you mean like back to the Symetra Tour run?
Or so if she doesn't go back, yeah, sure. If she's over here, sure.
Because we
your player.
Beginning January 2020, Charlotte went and got her LET Tour card. So we did that because we had to do that for Solheim reasons, because you have to be an LET member to be able to get into the Solheim. And in all honesty, I mean, I think it would depend on my own financial situation. Like if I got bills to pay, I got bills to pay, you know, like, but I would like to think that I would be able to, like, if the person said, look, I can afford to keep you for a year while I'm on Symetra Tour, would you do it? I don't see why I wouldn't.
And I have to say, just from like a, you know, an athlete or caddy mentality or like whatever, just like a, you know, a progressive mentality, like I'm sure that's not even like a thought in your head, right?
That's
a super hypothetic,
yeah,
right?
That's never happening.
Yeah.
it's never happening, Ron.
That's reality.
I mean, we're going from 80. We finished 80th on the order round in 2019. This year, obviously, is disregarded because it's COVID year. Next year, we're finishing higher than 80th. We're going nowhere near that 100.
Okay, here's a question: does your player work out? Like, is she strengthened? Because she's short. She's not long.
Yeah. She works. She does.
And out here on the LPGA, it's length that wins.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to be honest, I think she's probably one of the most professional players I've ever worked with, in terms of she works on her mind, body, everything, at all times. I mean, I'm pretty sure she could beat me up, because she's feisty. But it's not just about distance. I think I was talking to her about it this week. I said, like, you know, we've got to make sure next year pinpoint the tournaments that you think you can compete at, and we got to make sure that they're the ones that we're making sure they're in your schedule and that they're ones where we can go and we're turning up to win. Like the event in Florida this week, it's not an event where it's like, okay, well, you know, it's a tough course. We're hitting a lot of hybrids, a lot of throughs. Like, are we going to be able to win the event? I don't know. We'd have to literally hit 100% every single shot. So it's very unlikely. But we go to places like Arkansas where everyone's hitting to the same points. Charlotte can win that event hands down. Like, there's not even a doubt where I'm like, oh, we can't win. Like, we can win an event. Just has to be the right
courses
one.
For courses.
Yeah.
She's clearly got the goal-setting mentality. I mean, if she went and got her LET card and you're talking about a 3 to 5 year plan, Solheim and stuff, I mean, she's got her LET card so she can be eligible for that. You don't go and do that if you don't think that there's, like, that future presence of being in that. That's a goal, right?
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, we had to miss the Boca event at the beginning of the year to do it. And I'd like to feel I was part of the contributing of kind of convincing her to go, because I think, you know, you're missing a $2 million event over here to go and do a Q school. And it was 2 weeks as well. We had to do pre-qualifying for the Q school because of like world rankings.
And how long does that last? Is that just one season, or now it carries over because of COVID?
Yeah, obviously. So it's she'll keep her status for 2 years. But you don't, to get into the Solheim, you don't have to keep status. You just have to be eligible for membership. So you have to just keep paying your membership yearly.
Oh, she's good now.
Yeah. So once you've got the card, you keep paying your membership, and you have to play, I think it's 8 events between each Solheim. So over 2 years, you have to play 4 events a year on the LET, and that includes co-sanctioned events. So it worked out perfectly, to be honest, for us. You know, we played Bonneville. We could have had a chance to win.
I used
that
to work
event.
At Bonneville.
What, in Australia?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, so we played that event, and that was great.
It's a cool course, eh?
Yeah, it was.
The
it was
Augusta
good fun.
Of Australia.
Yeah, and yeah. And that's another thing. Like, we're gonna do our schedule next year, and we'll chat about it over Christmas and work it all out. But it's one of them where it's like, if we get a chance and she wants to go and play a few events in Europe, like the way they set the courses up in Europe, Charlotte could walk one of those events. You know, she could win that hands down. People would go, who is this? And it's like, yeah, this is the girl who's playing on the LPGA, which is, like, for me, is the next level of golf to the LET. And she's going to smash it. Like, that's how I see it. But it's, like you say, guys, it's long-term goals. And she's got the whole plan in her head, I think. And she's got an idea of where we're going. And
so the whole Solheim Cup is open to LPGA and LET. If you're a stud over there at LET, you can still make the Solheim Cup for America, or if not for America, but just a Solheim Cup team versus America.
Well, there's points, yeah. Right? It's points-based, which would probably get more merit on the LPGA Tour, sure. But there's always captain's picks and things like that.
So I think 2 players qualify from the, I mean, don't quote me on this, I think it's 2 qualify from the LET, and then 6 qualify from the world rankings list. So top 6 in the world, first things first is the top 2 on the LET order merit. Oh, sorry, LET Solheim points, which is, that includes all the majors. So that's why you get like the likes of Carlotta or Charlie, they'll get in via that. And then you have the next top 6 on the world, and then it's 4 picks.
Is the Solheim similar to the President's Cup, so all over the world?
No, that's Europe versus America. There's the International Crown is the President's Cup for the women, and that's the version.
So it's the same thing. It's Europe versus America, and I'd say, I mean, it's huge. I mean, that whole the Suzanne Pettersen holding the putt last year, dropping
the mic.
I mean, that was
awesome.
That was a better moment that we've had in the Ryder Cup since. I'm trying to think Paul McGinley, like in the Belfry. Like, I'm trying to think of one where it was that close, or like in Medina. Like where Poulter or Keimer hold that putt, like you don't get them sort of moments that often, and that was just unbelievable,
electric.
Yeah, that was perfect.
I was jumping around the living room watching that one, and that's why I watch that and I'm like, God, I do this job and I've got an opportunity to be there, like I got to get there.
Yeah, every person that we've had on the podcast or just talked to with that experience is always. The highlight, you know, we had Christy McPherson on pretty recently, and she had was fortunate enough to be in a Solheim Cup, and Karen Stupples, et cetera. And
you
like,
know what I love is the Olympics. Do you know how many Olympians we have out here?
Yeah, that's huge as well.
Huge.
And it's real competitive now for GB. I mean, we've got Charlie, Georgia, I just learned today Bronte, that Mel. It's like, whoa.
Stephanie Meadows was in the Olympics for Ireland.
Yeah.
There are so many Olympians out here, which I am very impressed with the Olympians, the best athlete in the world. Yeah. Not the country, the world.
Yeah.
Get the
yeah,
country.
Well, I mean, of course there's going to be all the Olympians out here, man.
I know, but I'm just so amazed because we haven't had.
There's only been one Olympics with golf. So.
And that was back in the turn of the century.
Yeah.
But I think it's just awesome we have so many Olympians out here. We've had them on the pod, and that just stokes me. Ashley and Dave Buhai, they both went there together as Olympians. And Ashley was the Olympian, and Dave was on the coattails. But what stories they have. But Stephanie Meadows was there. Oh, it's just amazing. I love it. That's what I would be shooting
for. Dude, Tiff Chan was there.
I know. Hey.
You're working for an Olympian.
Olympian. That's what I love.
I worked for an Olympian, Kelly Tan.
It's just unbelievable.
You work for an international, there's a good opportunity, especially those Asian countries outside of Korea, right?
It's just amazing.
The interesting one for me, right, and this is me just throwing in, like, this is throwing a grenade in a load of people, right, is at what point, because they're not allowed to go to the Olympics without a caddy, but at what point would a caddy be considered as part of the Olympic team that wins a medal?
Sorry?
So you're not allowed to compete in the Olympics without a caddy.
Sure.
But
I think you're fully part of it.
But only the player ever gets a medal. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't think I'm ever deserving of a medal, but what I'm saying is, like, how can you say you have to be there and then say, oh, no, but they don't.
Well, do they give it to the horse in the equestrian events?
They give him a rosette of flowers. I'd take that.
I filled out my paperwork for Kelly this year
Tokyo.
Until we, you know, obviously everything got canceled. But, you know, that's ancient history. You
back of my mind, Hong Kong, Tokyo.
2021, baby.
I mean, hey,
Ron wants to hold this bag till 2020. You could be an Olympian.
Tiff, I just want to go to the Olympics. I want to eat bread with... the people there.
Wouldn't that be... First of all, Ron, have you ever missed a cut on the LPGA Tour?
Let me think. No, I have not.
Oh! Mic drop.
Boom!
There's only one person in this room right now that has never missed a cut on tour, and that's Captain Ron, everybody.
It is amazing out there, I must say, but I don't bring that much to the table. I got to be honest with you.
You bring more than you think, Ron.
I know. I agree. I've always sold myself short. But you know what? I enjoy being out there. I love it just like you. I would do this... As Casey knows, I do this for free. It's just the love of the passion of the game. I just love being out there. Zorzhia grass just turns me on. You know, isn't Zorzhia out here. We got Bermuda, but still.
Ron's playing off it during the day, drying it, and smoking it at night.
That's it, baby.
How many ounces of vodka you got in there, man?
It's 420 somewhere.
You know, but I think that, you know, I love your attitude, Chris. And I mean, I've got to know Ron, like, very, very well over this past season running the podcast with him. But, like, Ron's attitude is
I don't pull punches.
So much like, you know, he's always like, I do it for free, whether it's the super stroke, whether it's working the boom mic, or whether it's caddy, and that's a great attitude. And, you know, you're like, I don't care, you know, financial gain, that'll come. And I think that, you know, when something's a vocation and people look at it like, you know, like it's a passion. They just want to do it. They just want to help their player. They just love it so much. I mean, whatever the money, you know, it's not irrelevant, but it'll come, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Just like you said earlier, Chris, you'd be out here. You just love being out here. You're not going anywhere. It's not the financial gains. You're out here.
We're not starving.
No.
Hell no. It's out here.
That's it. I mean, I get to do things that people dream of doing, and I get to do them because I'm on a week off. You know, like, I mean, this year we had a week off. I went to the Horseshoe Bend and kayak down the Colorado River. Like, how often are you going to do that?
Unbelievable.
You know, and I'm doing that because it's on my way to the next
event.
Yeah,
like, Ron, I went to Yellowstone National Park and watched a grizzly bear eat an elk on our way through. Like, yeah. I mean, you know.
Yeah, we went to Philadelphia and run the steps at Rocky Run.
I mean, you don't get to have just these experiences. And like I say, I'm lucky because my home life is fine with me doing it. And, like, Nora loves me coming out here and having these experiences. But, like, people who look at it and are like, oh, yeah, you can do this, you can win that. And I'm like, I've already won the lottery. Like, you don't realize what I've got to do in my life because of what I do rather than what I could do if I do really well at what I do.
It's a great attitude,
like,
man.
Like, I'm doing it every day.
But the fact of the matter, we love to go to work. That there's not very many people that can say that.
No, 100%.
They're unbelievable.
Thursday to Sunday. Monday to Wednesday.
I mean, Ron, I don't know when you were standing by the putting green getting cold.
I sat down. I know. I see those guys babysitting the bags. I went and found it.
You're going to make me watch you putt for an hour?
Oh, it's unbelievable. But we closed the range on Tuesday and Wednesday. We closed the range.
Yeah, you made a cut, man.
We made a cut.
She's just keeping you out there, Ron.
Cha-ching.
I love it. I'll be out there sun up to sun down. I just enjoy it. I don't care. Watching the grass grow.
So, Christopher, let's talk about KPMG. You can try, you know, one of the biggest purses of the year. The event that you spoke maybe 10 minutes ago about hauling Charlotte out because you tested positive for COVID-19.
Yeah.
Talk us through that. Where did you get it? What was the experience like? You just give us the lowdown.
So we were in New Jersey. So I drive from Pennsylvania, where I was staying at my friend's house, drove down to New Jersey. pick Charlotte up at Philadelphia Airport, take her to her digs, spend the week in New Jersey. On the Sunday, I went out for a Chipotle. Nothing really happened. Spent the whole week then eating in my room. Didn't have any beers, just sat drinking water and trying to keep myself as healthy as possible. I've been trying to lose weight, which seems to be failing, but, you know, did that. And then my friend Paul, who was in the same motel as me, he came down with COVID. And I delivered shopping to him, never went close to him, but delivered shopping just to his door and then walked away. And he bank transferred me the money and stuff. So I went from that. Then we did that event. I felt like I maybe felt a bit ropey on the Saturday, Sunday, but not really thinking anything of it. Like, I thought I was a bit dehydrated.
Because we're in the bubble.
Yeah. So I've not been anywhere. I'm like, I don't know if I could have got anything. I had a funny feeling that I had COVID for no reason. And so I was keeping myself hydrated, taking Barocas, which are vitamin tablets, just to keep myself going through the day and things. But I thought it was where I was dieting and energy levels and stuff. And then Sunday we drive to KPMG and Charlotte's let's get our test done Sunday. I'm like, yeah, that sounds good to me. Share a car ride, share a bag of Skittles. We're having a great time on the way there. Just singing, having a good time in the car. Get there. I go and do a test. I then go to stay at a host house that I was going to be staying at for the week. I chat to them and I'm sitting at the end of the table. So I'm like, look, just stay away from me for tonight and until I've got my test results. And then that night I had a nightmare. I woke up at 2 a.m. thinking that I had an email about having COVID. I'm like, oh, that was weird. What's wrong with you? So go back to sleep. I wake up at 7 a.m. I got missed calls, all sorts of stuff that's going on. I look at my emails, bang. Stacey's emailed me, Chris, I need to call you. And I was like, well, she's not calling to have a chat. There's only one reason this person wants to call me. So I called her back and said, Stace, what's going on? And she was like, Chris, you've had a positive COVID test. So I immediately left there, went to a hotel. And then I was in the hotel for 10 days.
Any way that could have been a false positive? Did you take a second test?
I went and had another test on the Tuesday. So you have to leave it 24 hours. So I went and had another test on the Tuesday. That was positive as well. And so then, I was stuck there for 10 days.
How'd you feel?
I didn't feel bad. Didn't feel that bad.
What'd your Whoop band say?
So this was the thing, right? So I left my charger for my Whoop band in Pennsylvania. So I had no data.
Oh, wow.
So I had no idea on the respiratory rates, but my Fitbit, which does the same sort of thing, said I was fine. It didn't suggest I was doing anything.
Did Charlotte
strange.
Test positive?
No. So Charlotte went and stayed in Philly. Obviously, so she had to withdraw from the event, which I felt so bad about because, it was a beautiful golf course.
Even if she tests negative?
She tested negative.
They rode a car ride together. Yeah. All
so because we were in a car, she was technically close contact. So she had to then quarantine. She had to quarantine for 2 weeks, which,
as a negative test result. Too.
Yeah. And so she then did that and she then tested again before, obviously, Georgia, and she was still negative. So she never got it. But I never felt really ill. Lost my sense of smell for 24 hours. But that was it. I tried to buy a load of healthy food once I lost my sense of smell because I thought, here we go.
Did you lose any weight?
No.
Nothing?
No, I mean, one of the days I did 470 steps run an entire day. I did not move for 10 days. Because I was scared. I was like, they've built this thing up to be so huge. I was like, if I go out and I go in the lift and I'm stood there and there's a 70-year-old guy gets in the lift with me.
Sure.
They have stairs. And in hotels.
I don't know if the hotel I stayed at had stairs. It wasn't a great hotel. And I was like, the last thing I want to do is spread this thing. I was like, so
how
I'll
bad
just...
did you feel then when you had to tell Charlotte? Or did she know?
Oh,
did
she already know? She would have known.
It was the worst. I mean, she had...
Did she get a call as well?
She said to me she had 15 missed calls that morning. So she obviously knew something could happen. But I felt horrendous. I mean, I couldn't imagine. It's bad enough that I got it. But the worst part, I mean, honestly, the virus for me wasn't a big thing. I'm fit and healthy and I felt I could get through it. The problem for me was that Charlotte had to pull out of the event. And it was a huge event
course.
I was like, it's not just affecting.
I couldn't imagine, yeah.
It's not just affecting her financially. It's affecting her career in terms of, we could have played there, finished top 40. We might have made CME. We could make
AMA next year. It's realistic in this climate and this time, and every week people go down, and as much as you, I mean, Ron said this to me, when he started working for TIFF, it was like, oh my god, I've never all of a sudden didn't really think about it before. I didn't, you know, and when I first flew down, I'm like, you know, I was kind of like sheepish around Ron or whatever. But then, you know, once he started working for somebody and you like that whole livelihood of having them, you know, attached to what you're doing too, all of a sudden you're worried about what you're doing. Like, you know, you're worried about where you're going because you're just tied to each other. And you, I can't imagine, especially on a major week, right? Like the biggest tournament of the year.
Yeah. And like the other thing for me was like, I don't know Charlotte's health background. Like she's a fit, to me, she's a fit young girl, but like, I don't know if she has respiratory issues. Like, I haven't asked, I didn't say, hi, I want a caddy for you. Can I please have your medical history?
Right. Do you have asthma?
Yeah. Like how's your breathing? Like it's so, you know, I was constantly worried. I'm like, will this potentially affect her long-term if she gets it? And then will that affect her in the future? Like, you know, like one of these people who catches Lyme disease and, you know, you don't mean to, but it does affect you long term. And so I was really worried. I was so pleased when she then tested negative, however many times, like four times since or whatever it's been. But it's, yeah, it was scary, but not personally scary. It was scary for other people. You know, I was like, wow, you know, I've got the Rona. Who am I going to, like, who else have I given this
to? Well, the LPGA, every week, we had one caddy or one player go down, and then we went to break. And if you remember, Casey, we had an over-under bet of four people. Would it be over four?
For this week with the three?
When we had 3 weeks off, would it be over four or under four? And it was over four.
Oh, it was
shattered four. Exactly. I don't remember that conversation. Yeah, did we say that?
It was on the air. And then next week, we got
what did we guess, just out of curiosity?
Four. Over-under was four. I went over.
Okay.
But, next week, we have a week off. It's Thanksgiving week. A lot of players, a lot of caddies are going to be with people. Coming into VOA, there are going to be a lot of bags open. There are going to be a lot of players gone.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, really, when you say about Thanksgiving. I do, like, I mean, for me personally, going, like, when I go home Christmas Day, am I going to be socially distant from people? Like, I'm going to be in, like, a six-person bubble almost, you know? Like there's going to be myself, Nora, my mum, my dad, my sister and her husband. And we're going to be like a six-person bubble. We're going to have a really good Christmas
day. It's really like a five-person bubble because you're immune.
But that's, yeah. I mean, and I think my sister's had it too. So we're basically the cure, my family. But it's one of them. I'm like, I couldn't imagine because Thanksgiving's as big as Christmas out here for Americans. And I couldn't imagine like just being like, oh, actually, I'm not going to see any of my family.
It's the biggest travel day. Airports are being, I don't know if they'll be crazy this year, but it's one of the biggest travel days in the United States on Thanksgiving. People come and go all the time in the airports, and we'll have some players gone at VOA, I guarantee, or caddies, players, everybody.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see what happens. But like, I just hope no one, I hope no one else has it. I hope no one else goes through it. I know there's obviously been a lot of people that went through it this past week.
Did you take any medication or anything like that, or just ride it out? Chicken soup?
I just rode it out. I honestly was.
I know you're a healthy young man.
I was fine, you know. I mean, I'm pretty much superhuman.
You and Donald Trump, you guys got through it in like 3 days.
I mean, that was the other thing.
They'll take his blood and they'll make a cure.
They told me. That's right. The doctor told me. He said you might test positive for up to 45 days. And I was thinking, oh crap! Like I got to go back to the UK. Like I can't keep testing positive. I'm supposed to be
Why
going,
do they say that?
I'm supposed to be going because it just stays in your system. He was like, but you know, it could be up to 3 months. Like, it's really varied how people keep it in the system. I was like, 2 weeks done. See you, Corona. Like, you get out of my system.
So then you're allowed back when you start testing negative. How many negative tests did you have before they allowed you back?
No, you're allowed back testing positive. So that was the thing. They said to me, even if I tested positive.
After 10 days, you're no longer
contagious?
So after 10 days, if you've got no symptoms, you're no longer contagious. So therefore, you can come back to work. And that's what they said to
symptoms
me.
Symptoms meaning low temperature or?
Yeah, fever and a like stuffy nose, I think, are the main two that they're saying.
I must say, every morning when I go to get my temperature checked, there is a little anxiety. There's a 5 second, oh my God, let's just hit that. That's why I stick my head out the window when I'm driving over to make sure I'm cool.
Just cool yourself down.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, it's one of those. The temperature check never got me, put it that way, you know, and I had the bloody thing.
Wow.
So, you know, there's people, some people get a fever, some don't. Some people get a cloggy nose, some don't. The one thing I've heard with the older people that I know that have had it, they get achy muscles, like achy muscles and joints. And I never had that.
Well, you don't have much muscle.
So, no, I mean, I'm just a big bag of lard. So, yeah, you know, nothing's going to wake on here. Great, thanks, Rob. But it was.
Cheers.
Yeah, it's. I don't know. It obviously affects different people differently. I think I've got a different strand to the one that seems to be affecting people really badly. And it's a touchy subject in general because I think it's such a divided subject. Some people think it's ridiculous and that it's.
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
Yeah. And some people think it's like, oh no, it's going
to
kill us all.
When you came back on tour, were you welcome back? Did anybody shy away from you, or you didn't have the plague or anything?
I signed right up to share a room with the guy.
Oh my! And where are you? How are you getting to Texas next week?
Yeah. I mean, I went up to Scotland. Right, I was so worried.
Did
about
you go home?
Test. So I was I didn't do Ohio Marathon. I started back up. So Charlotte had another friend of mine, Jeff. He did the first two events. And then I started up in Scotland. And I had to do two tests. I did two tests before I went up there. Because we had to do this spit test. And then the results never came back. So I went and got an NHS test and got that done. And I was so worried. I was like, I don't know. Because I had no idea. Because I was delivery driving at the time. I was like, I don't know. I might have it. But then I went up there, and then as soon as I was in Scotland, I was like, all right, we're pretty safe. I mean, we were in such a huge bubble. We couldn't leave our rooms in Scotland, couldn't leave our rooms at the British. We fly straight to Arkansas, all on the same plane. I'm like, there is no way of us being any safer. And I felt pretty safe the entire time. But, like, it's not surprising that I caught it. I mean, I had a week off before the week I caught it, but... like it's not surprising, I think, that it's in the breaks when people are getting it. They're not getting it at the tournaments.
So you survived COVID, you've made it through 2020. Your season's kind of wrapping up right now.
Yeah.
Am I correct on that?
Yeah.
I mean, there's only a few events left. I heard a rumor, little birdie Charlotte's heading home, not in the US Open, CME. What goes on for Chris Edwards in the off season?
Not much, really. I suppose I'll go home.
Off season, we still got three more events to go. Are you going to hang around?
I mean, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean, once things are confirmed with Charlotte, if she decides to go home or if she stays out, I want her to go home because I want her to go and enjoy her family and have a good time with her family in Australia. But, yeah, we'll see. I mean, like, if I can get a bag in Dallas, I will. And if I get a bag at the US Open and CME, I mean, that'd be fantastic. But I don't really see that necessarily happening now.
Short daylight, small fields.
What kind of field is it going to be the U.S. Open? Is it a full 154?
It's a full 154 field.
Two courses.
But everyone who's going, they're going to have a caddy with them.
I don't know. There's a lot of amateurs. There's like, I think, 20 amateurs coming up.
Yeah. It is an option. So, I'll have a look and see. We'll play it by ear over the next kind of few days.
Put your name on the list.
Yeah, exactly. It is. So we'll see what happens, but... Yeah, I'll get home, and then I'll be a house husband for a few weeks until Christmas. And
lucky
then,
girl.
Is your fiance back in UK?
Yeah, she's in the UK. Even though she's American, she's in the UK. And so, yeah, I'll go back there, and I'll look after her.
Does she work in the golf industry or anything?
No. She works in...
She's a smart one.
Yeah, she is smart. Yeah, she works in a home looking after disabled children. And she's a manager of the home, so she's a smart girl and does a job that I could never do. So she looks after me while I'm at home. I'm her, she's my sugar mama, is what I say to her. But no, so she'll look after me and we'll do stuff, and I'll probably go back to delivery driving tomorrow. So I'll go and delivery drive some food throughout Christmas.
No looping over there at a private club.
Life of a caddy, man. Life of a caddy, bro.
Just filling time.
Just getting ready for the 2021 season. Well, we've really loved having you on here, Chris.
Thanks for joining us.
It wasn't as painful as you thought it would be, huh? Like, you never met a Mike you didn't like. I can see it in you, huh? But you know, like, what you got to give us, like, what's a? I mean, maybe there's an LET story where
golf's a funny game. Give us a funny story.
Give us your best tour life story. Whether it's I don't know. What do you got for us?
Let me think. So
you party with Laura Davies?
So I got. Oh yeah, man.
Give me
times.
A Laura Davies
many
story.
Times.
Exactly.
Many times.
Come on.
No, so okay. So there was. Let me give you two short ones. Okay. So there was one. One moment in China, which was one of the funniest caddy moments I've had, which wasn't funny at the time, but it was on a par five asking, I told Hannah, I said, look, you got a layup here. She goes, yeah, where have I got to go? I said, at them three bunkers. And this is the same course they're playing the LPGA. She goes, okay, at them same three bunkers. She goes, yeah, perfect. Anyway, she steps up, bang, hits this thing straight into the middle of a lake. And I said, where the hell are you going? thing? I use more explicit words, but I said, where are you going with that thing? And she went, the three bunkers. I went, why are them ones? Pointing at them three bunkers up there. And she goes, oh, I completely didn't realize where this hole went. And I was like, oh, geez, that was not a good move. Anyway, so that was one there.
That's a good one.
And then another time was when we were in Japan. We were at the bar around the back of the hotel. And we went out the night before the first day because Laura was like, look, this is just a fun event. Let's have a bit of team environment, have a team spirit. We go to this bar and we end up playing darts. And it was the year Leicester won the premiership. And I'm there with Jeff and there's a load of us. We're all having drinks. And Laura says to me, I think it was either six or eight ciders. She was like, that's my limit. I got to go. And I was like, okay, all right. And Laura was throwing 180s. I mean, she was just unbelievable at darts. I'm like, okay, anyway. So she leaves. Well, then us caddies, you know, stupid.
Hung around a bit.
We stayed there for a little while. And,
sure, why not?
And then we go back to our rooms. I mean, I remember getting dressed before going to bed because I knew there was no chance of me waking up in time to get changed. So I got dressed, then went to sleep, woke up, walked straight out of the building.
Move, man. Yeah. That's a great
move.
That is
a good one.
I went straight out of the room, straight down onto this bus ride that we had, but it was an hour. And I mean, it's the bus ride stunk because of the caddies. And, and then I get there and I'm on the bus and I'm like, what's going on? And anyway, and Emily at the time, she had a caddy and I won't give his name away, but he was caddying for it. And then she's like, where is he? And I was like, I don't know. She's like, did he go to bed early? I was like, yeah, he went to bed early. Well, this caddy had stayed out till 3 or 4 in the morning, been karaoke singing and missed the bus.
Oh,
he had to pay for an Uber, which was like $100 to get to this golf course. And he arrives and I've got his player's bag and my player's bag. And I'm like, man, I'm way too hungover to be carrying two of these things. And he's like, yeah, I'm here now. Let's go. And then we won. We won our morning match. And that was the way we went. I thought, well.
Did he make it to the first tee?
Oh, yeah, he made it. He made it just about in time.
Nice.
And
that's European tour for you. That wouldn't happen on the lady LPGA.
That's LET only, that kind of stuff. You know?
Well, it sounds like a ride out there.
Yeah, and that's it. But you live and learn, you know. It was great fun, probably a bit of a mistake. But, you learn from it and you grow. And that was the main thing.
What's the biggest takeaway you've had over the last 4 or 5 years of caddying? Like, what would you have told your rookie caddy self in the position that you're in now? Like,
don't do anything different. Do everything exactly as I've done it, and it will be the best time of your life.
Cool, man.
Well, we enjoyed having you, Chris. It was a pleasure to talk to you, and you got some great stories. We just totally enjoyed that.
Yeah, you're a legend. You're now a friend of the pod, and thanks so much for coming on. Do you want to give a shout out to anybody, or do you want anybody to, like, find you anywhere on social media?
I've got a thing called the Caricature Caddy on Instagram, but it's not very good.
We can't guarantee that we're going to give you any more followers, but you could try.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if I got one more.
I like the sound of that.
Maybe just you, Ron. That'd
be caricature on Instagram.
Caricature caddy. It's kind of because I see myself as a bit of a caricature of a human, you know.
I like that.
Not quite realistic, but yeah, no, it'd be great. It's been great chatting to you guys. That's the main thing.
Excellent. Well, thanks for coming on. Let's Talk Divots, brother.
Yeah, and we appreciate everybody once again. Just a little wrap up here for sharing us, liking us, commenting us. We're happy to be back. We've had a few weeks off, but we're rolling here to a little bit of a finish. And you know what? I'm feeling really good. I just want to give, why don't you go ahead, anybody listening, if you've made it this far, send us an email, send me an email of your golf swing on letstalkdivots@gmail.com, and I'll do a little analyzation of it for free.
Well, this guy's a pro, ladies and gentlemen, so he might learn something here.
2015 BC PGA Teacher of the Year. I'll send it back to you. I'll tell you what I think and, see if we can get you improving your golf swing and, maybe go at something from there. But letstalkdivots@gmail.com. Send us a little video and keep sharing us. And we appreciate you. Much love, y'all.